One thing I was thinking when the K-Travel session was going, which is all good stuff, is that I think all the instructors have thought this, but they just didn't quite say it this way, is that when you become a blind person, you start getting out there with your cane and stuff, you develop educated ankles. Because you can tell as you cross, most driveways are, they slant down towards the street. So a lot of times when you get onto a driveway, you can notice that, hey, this is slanting down to the right. So knowing that that's a driveway and that feeling that slant, that it could help you to walk straight across that driveway because you keep yourself at it at that certain slant. Just as or at least around in Omaha, the majority of the blocks, when you get towards the curb, they all kind of angle down. Again, your ankles can pick up that before your cane will tell your arm and hand actually. I mean, it doesn't happen all the time, but it does it so much of the time, that sort of thing. Just, blind people get educated ankles. They tell you a lot. Anyway, all right. That was just a thought I had. Oh, one other silly story. This is about home stuff again. This used to drive my neighbors crazy. Nowadays I have leaf guards on my gutters, but for a decade I would just take my white cane. I'd get up on the roof and I would walk along the edge and I would have my cane tip down inside the gutter looking to see, oh, there's some leaves. So I'd stop and I'd kneel down and pull the leaves out and throw them over the side. And I'd get up and I'd start walking again. I've got my cane to drag it along in the gutter, So my neighbors would come out and they say, what are you doing here? That's dangerous. So I always just say, look, just don't look. In fact, don't bother me. Otherwise, you're going to maybe distract me, maybe I'll fall on your head. Anyway.
Well, we got a new one. I don't think we've heard from Mary Davis, but I asked her to unmute. It's star 6.
Oh, Nebraska person.
Or no, I guess it wouldn't be on your phone if it's your name there, but, have a poem starter for Shelley while we wait for Mary there. About 'twas the night before convention.
Yeah, well, we'll do that. I had one thought about cane travel also that I'm not sure we've covered. When people are giving you directions, a lot of times they're really trying, but they're facing you and you're facing them. I try and I stop them and I face the direction that they're facing so that we're standing side by side, and I will gesture with my hands to make sure, because they're using their hands often to figure out which is right and left. Because if I'm facing them, they're going to tell me right, and they mean my left, their right often. So sometimes listening to the body language of the people who are giving you information can help you, you can do things so that you make certain that what information they're giving you is accurate to you. And you can do that sometimes by facing the same direction they are, or repeating what they're saying maybe a little differently or whatever it might be, but so that you're in charge of the information that you get and then how you interpret it.
All right, Mary Davis, hi. What is your thoughts today? Well, she is a
Well, that might be, isn't that George, Robert?
It could be that George is with her.
Yeah, I think it is.
Sure. Let's see. Of course, if you're on your landline, Mary, star 6. If you're
okay,
on
they've
your
turned
phone,
on and muted themselves. Maybe they didn't want to speak. Raise her hand.
Mary's not shy.
Okay, well,
yeah.
I will send a
Break
request
in
again to unmute.
Did you want me to do a poem? Is that what you were saying?
No, I just said. I just said I had an idea for a poem. I gave you the first line.
That would be an interesting poem.
Right. 'Twas the night before convention, and all through the hotel, 3,000 canes tapping, echoing through all stairwells.
Before hell. So, write it and bender it in the poetry contest for the Writers Division poetry contest.
Never thought about
it. It opens January 1st and closes April 30th. And the guidelines are not up yet, but they need to be.
Mary's unmuted.
Okay, Mary's unmuted if you'd like to speak.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yay. Thank you. Yeah, Mary from Nebraska, along with a friend of ours who is also listening. Through the week, during the cane travel, there have been a number of the men who have commented about when they got started cane traveling. And I was just wondering if some of you guys, maybe for starters, could talk about how it was when you lost your vision and how it was difficult getting going with a lot of cane and just some of the everyday skills. How did you start accepting the blindness by using the cane and field? Did that help you accept the blindness?
Well, this is Wayne, and I know for me, initially I was, you know, I have RP, first of all, which is retinitis pigmentosa. And so a lot of times, you know, that starts with night blindness and seeing better with more light. When there's more light, the better you see. And so consequently, during the daytime, I could see better, and at night, not so much. But so there was times, you know, where I would not use a cane, and things started happening that I found a need to, like running into things or stepping off, missing a step, and stuff like that. And it wasn't until I had some incidents occur where I bumped into some people, and they accused me of being drunk and asked me what's wrong with me and, you know, stuff like that. And I got tired of looking like something I wasn't, you know, like I was drunk or something, or I was at a bus stop and a gentleman with, you know, bus would pull up and I'd say, "Hey, what number are you?" And he'd say, "Well, it's up there up front. Can't you read?" You know, and I go, "I can read, but I can't see. And he'd say, "Well, where's your cane?" You know, and then so it was more sighted people asking me, "Where's my cane?" Like, so I can identify myself as blind. But that was the problem. I didn't want to identify myself as blind. And so it and then also there was that feeling of vulnerability. So one was identifying myself as blind, and the other one was saying, "Hey, I'm vulnerable too because I'm blind." And with those two things going on, it was difficult. And then plus also before, I know a lot of people, you know, being in the sighted world, and here I'm transitioning to the blindness, and so, you know, I didn't want people asking me, you know, "Well, what's that? What's that for?" Which I did get, you know, what's that about? You know, it's like, well, you know, you didn't know this, but I'm visually impaired. You know, that was the thing. I'm visually impaired. You know, we use all these terms, you know, low vision, visually impaired, everything but blind, right? You know, and so it finally just got bad enough. And I felt so constrained that it was more important for me to live the life I wanted, to have my independence, to be able to move about freely, safely, and confidently, than not. And so, and I think it really happened for me when I went to the Colorado Center for the Blind as a student in 98. And, you know, of course, you know, there was still times I, you know, I was cheating with the sleep shades, and I was, you know, I had to realize I was cheating myself, even then, because, you know, I was not getting all the skills that I could get. I wasn't getting everything out of my lessons that I should have gotten. So consequently, when you didn't have the sleep shades on, when it was dark at night, and I, you know, wanted to, move about freely, I did. It was helpful, but not nearly as well as I could have if I would have worn my sleep shade effectively during training. And so once I started doing that, and once I was around other blind people and saw the freedom that they had, saw how respectful it was to be blind, you know, that you don't have to be ashamed. And it removed those barriers that, quite frankly, I placed in front of myself. I mean, I put those up. No one else put that up there. You know, no one else said, "Well, you're going to be vulnerable." No one else said, you know, "You're less of a person because you're blind." No one else said that. It's just things that I thought that I had in my mind, the misconception of blindness, as we call it. Those are things that prevented me from being free sooner, you know, as a blind person. And so then as I accepted that and became more more accepting of myself as a blind person. I became free, and then that's when I started using my cane all the time, and it became second nature. And tell you the truth, it started feeling weird not to have my cane. It was very uncomfortable not having my cane. And I always tell the story. Remember my mom saying, "Hey, that's okay. Come on, let's go here. You don't need your cane. I got you." And I said, "No, Mom, I need my cane. My cane got me. You had me. You raised me. Now my cane got me. I don't feel right without my cane." So that was it for me. And then, you know, I guess that also made me a better instructor too, because, you know, I could share that story with others who are experiencing that. And I could empathize with what they're going through and dealing with and their own struggle with accepting the cane, accepting their blindness as well.
Randy has a question.
Randy Pfeiffer.
Yes, yes. I wanted to let you know that I had a couple of experiences when I was learning O&M. And one was we went through residential sidewalks, and that was the worst for me because, unfortunately, I had the shortest O&M instructors of all time, and I'm 6'1". They would walk under branches like it's no one's business. However, they would smack me in the face, and I'm walking behind them or, you know, walking my route, and the O&M instructors would walk under the branches, but I, of course, was getting smacked by the branches. And another situation was I was walking down the sidewalk, and you have to know that when you search with your cane, you have to keep your feet straight. I used to always turn my feet, so when I started walking again, I was walking at another angle, and it wasn't straight down the sidewalk. So keeping my feet straight and searching with my cane. So when I went to a driveway, I actually turned my feet and I went into the driveway and my cane went under this object and I didn't know what it was. So I started, you know, investigating to see what it was. It was actually a gentleman's boat in his driveway and I'm, you know, rustling through it trying to wonder what it is. Well, that's really not good advice when, you know, I'll just have to be straight with you. When you're a black man in a middle-class white neighborhood going through a man's boat in his driveway, that could be very unhealthy. So I had to inform the O&M instructor that, you know, that really wasn't cool. So other than getting smacked in the face with the branches, because I'm 6'1", so they were 5 feet or less, and going through a gentleman's boat, you know, in his driveway, that's just not healthy. But it was fun, and it helped me to recognize and learn. And a lot of times through our investigation and education, we come through situations that are really kind of funny at the end. That's it.
Hey, Randy, this is Robert. So those are a couple of good stories. I really get the sensitive part of that second story of yours. I truly do. And then my little comment, I just wanted to, that was me that's, and maybe you recognize me. I said about the tree branch, you know, that's real life. Cause I'm only 5'8" and still, we should ask, you know, the cane travel instructor, Mr. Wayne here, kind of, and what I meant by real life is, you know, even when you get at your best with your cane travel, you could be the best cane traveler in the world, you're still going to get whacked in the face. So that's what I meant.
That's right.
Real life. There's no way to get around. Some people might say, well, I wear glasses, dark glasses, because I have a weird looking left eye. A little kid's always said, well, why is that your eye halfway asleep? You know, or anyway, so I wear glasses so I just protect my eyes. But there I have some other friends that wear like a baseball hat because, you know, the baseball hat will probably get, you know, tell you that there's a branch there before it touches your face. So anyway, I don't know. I'm sure if Wayne has anything to say, because that instructor that was shorter than you probably was just, you know, you're going to find that. So that's just kind of the way it is a little bit, you know.
I just think she didn't realize it and she wasn't doing it, you know. It wasn't intentional at all. It just happened.
What ran through my mind is that instructor probably just didn't turn around and say, you know, Randy, I could have told you, but you know what? I'm not going to be with you all the time. So sorry, dude. That's just kind of, you know.
No, it goes with the territory. you know.
Being tall, yeah.
Yeah, right. I'm, you know, 6 feet and I have to, I've gotten it also, branches and bushes that's sticking out from someone's home, going down the sidewalk, low hanging branches from trees. It, you know, it's sprinklers. It's just all a part of it. You know, and sometimes you can sense those things though. I've had opportunity, you know, I've sensed them and I've ducked or, you know, or if it's on a route that you're familiar with, you know to look for it, but otherwise there's nothing you can do.
True.
Yeah.
Jerry, I just wanted to say that sometimes I sense that it's there and I'll stop. I won't be moving, but I'll raise the cane up above my head just to feel around in the distance. I do not, when you're in motion, you absolutely want your cane on the ground giving you information, but there's absolutely nothing wrong with extending your arm above your head, maybe even angling it in front of you a little bit if you suspect something like that. There's absolutely no 100% surefire way of avoiding trees except don't go out. So that's not an option. So obviously you have to figure out something. I've even heard people use helmets. I'm not a fan of shin guards and helmets myself, walking around every day. But people do what they got to do for their own selves. But for me, you know, it's just you have to.
I'm with you, Jerry. But you know, there's sometimes if you're walking and you all of a sudden it becomes really shady. You know, that may be an indication for you. And like Jerry said, you could stop and check at that point. But yeah, you don't want to raise your cane when you're walking and miss something else. But
another indicator is a sidewalk. You can, and there again, this takes time.
Being raised.
Yeah, raising up. I mean, I live in a neighborhood that has trees that have messed up the sidewalk and sometimes I don't pay any attention. I just think it's a slope. Sometimes there is a slope specifically, but there are times when you can tell where the sidewalk has been lifted up 2 or 3 inches. It probably is a good sign. And this, you know, you're not going to get this your first time out. This takes practice to understand all the cues around you. And sometimes, unfortunately, it does take bumps. We learn from our bumps. How many times are you going to walk by this spot and get hit in the head and get mad at because there are trees I've seen that actually lean over the sidewalk. I remember walking down in my neighborhood one time, this tree completely grew at an angle across the sidewalk. And I mean, no matter what I tried to do, I mean, once I realized where it was at, I didn't do it, but it clothes hangered me around the neck. I mean, I wasn't paying attention. And there's times when you can be as focused as you want. You can be as smart as you want. You can be a 25-year mobility instructor and you fall off the sidewalk because your mind wanders. You just don't always pay attention. So you do the best you can with what you have and you hope that you live long enough to get good training.
Thank you very much, Jeff.
You're welcome. Thanks very much.
Yeah, in my neighborhood, I know where some of those are, so I'll actually anticipate it and have my hand up there. But mostly in my neighborhood, I will stop and I will trim those branches for them. In fact, because I looked it up, there's actually a law or whatever it is you want to call it that, you know, the homeowner has to, you know, not allow their bushes and trees, you know, to impede the progress of people walking down the street. And the rest of the law says, you know, that if the person walking can actually do the trimming, but if you trim those bushes, those tree limbs and walk off with them, then you can get in trouble for stealing them. You know, get trouble for stealing those branches.
You're not allowed to obstruct a public way, you know, whether it's a sidewalk, a road, or any of that. Yeah, and I think that probably falls along the same lines as if a neighbor's tree is over in your yard, you can cut it. And so I think we should have the right of way of public walkways.
Yeah,
I can remember back in my youth tearing one of those branches off, but then the next time I tried it was a little tougher and it didn't work. So I thought probably not a good idea.
Well, I don't suggest that or recommend it, but I think if we ask people to raise their hands who've done it, you would get a large number of people who have. And
this is Shelley. Can I tell you a funny story about tree branches?
Sure. Can you tell us a funny story about tree branches?
I live in North Texas, and everybody has a tree here. Everybody. So I looked at my mailbox one time and I pulled out this letter and it said, "You're in code violation," because what Robert was talking about. it's true. You know, in our city code, if I think it's like 2 inches or 2 feet. That's it, 2 feet. And by the way, I've run into branches before. I just learned to duck. But anyway, so I looked at this letter, and it had my address on it, had my name on it, and so I rent this house. It's not okay, my house. So I called our landlord. I said, there's a code violation here. And I'm thinking to myself, there's no tree right there by the sidewalk. There's a tree by the fence that divides the property line, but that's on ours. That's on this side of the porch. It's not even near the sidewalk. So he got the letter and he called me and he said, you know, the city said that wasn't your house. I said, well, I knew it wasn't my house. And we have an alley that's on the back, and we went and trimmed those branches and said, I'm not getting in trouble for a stupid code violation. Because it wasn't, I mean, it wasn't even, I'm like, how do you get my address mixed up with someone else's? There's not, I don't know. But I just thought,
yeah.
I didn't even know there was a tree code violation until that happened. But it's true. Mm-hmm. It is true. So if you ever get one.
Check the address. So,
can I?
That's right. Check the address.
Yes. Okay. If we check the time, I think we need to move on. What I'd like people to do is, if you have some event at an upcoming state convention, particularly for seniors, or something in your state that you'd like to share with people, that you do that. And then after we hear from some people, I know some states are planning some things, we will take states that have had conventions, but maybe they have something to share. And Robert, why don't you lead off with, because you mentioned it, but our listserv, you have a calendar on our listserv. Do you want to talk about that? Calls from states, and then talk about Nebraska?
Yes, because I actually won't be here tomorrow because our actual meeting, our senior division meeting, got changed from 10 o'clock to 4 o'clock.
Okay.
However, but there's another event that I'm part of that also was switched, and so I won't be here for the hobby event tomorrow. So, Miss Ruth, please do remember you're gonna be the person. Yeah. In fact, Jill, the person that's going to be doing our hobby thing tomorrow, the
craft
towel origami, she's going to be doing the very well a similar project at the Nebraska state convention that starts tomorrow morning. She'll be doing that for an hour before she comes and spends an hour with you guys. So that'll be kind of interesting.
Good.
But every month there are like 14 different senior divisions and groups around the country. And we communicate with each one of them every month, and they have been very good about giving information about if they have a meeting, what time it is, if there's Zoom numbers, what the Zoom numbers are. And so there's a calendar that's put out every month. A copy goes to our senior division listserv. If you're not a member of it, consider being one, because there's other information that comes that way that relative, you know, to seniors. So, and also on our senior division website, on the homepage, there's a link to always the current calendar. So that's available. And it's really great because every single one of these meetings is open to guests. So they love to have people drop in and share or just take part in what they are studying, because there's always something to learn. Just like these calls, you know, this week, you've learned a lot. Well, every month there's there's at least 8 phone calls that happen every month, and you would be willing to. Anyway, you're invited. All right. So anyway, so mine's tomorrow, and I just finally got the Zoom numbers today. So I'll be posting that to the senior division listserv later. So if someone wants to come join us, in fact, our national rep is Dr. Maurer. So he's going to be talking to us somewhat about the history of the Federation, and also another one of our guests talking about the current stuff that's going on for seniors within the Federation is our own Miss Duncan Larson. Duncan, I hope you saw that the time has changed. In fact, the day changed. Anyway, I hope she'll still be available at 4 o'clock our time tomorrow. It goes to 6:30. All right, so that's Nebraska.
Okay, it's Mike Wolf.
Is there any other Go ahead.
I'm doing the Alaska convention this weekend, tomorrow and Saturday. That's why Jerry and Abby will be running this event, because I committed to that before this. But so, of course, there is a challenge because that's a very small state, and, you know, they're trying to keep the NFB going. And, of course, doing it virtually online has attracted a few more people in. But I did Indiana, which 2 weeks ago, which really has helped me with this event, because I learned the hard way all the little anomalies of Zoom, and we made all the archives available. So even though the convention is come and gone, we have pretty much everything that was said archived, including anyone who did video. We have those, you know, MP4 video files. So I was pretty excited to get that done. And then 2 weeks assisting Ohio, which is a very, very large scale convention as well. But that's what we're doing. I think we got some hands here. Judy?
Okay, good.
Yes, this is Judy. And we have the NFB of Minnesota. This is a very special year for us. We are one of the original 7 founding members of the National Federation of the Blind in 1940, but our organization goes back to 1920. So we are celebrating 100 years, and a couple of things about that. If you want to know more about the accomplishments of the NFB of Minnesota, you can go to our website, nfbmn.org, and then /100 years, the number 100 years, all one word, and you will get, you can get history. You can also get a verbal history, a 26-minute rendition of all our accomplishments, and it's told by over 80 of us. I'm very proud of it. I didn't put it together, but I'm one voice on it. We have our convention coming up November 6th through the 8th, Zoom, of course, and on November 7th, from 2 to 3:30, we will have our NFB of Minnesota Senior Division meeting. That's it.
Okay, Carol?
I'm president of the Seniors Division in Alabama, and we are a fairly new division. We average about between 15 and 20 people on our monthly phone calls, which is great, I think, because we're a rural state. And we're trying to draw in people from our new at-large chapter at our next meeting. Our next number 12, it's at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. It's almost always the second Thursday of each month, and it's open to anyone who wants to join us. We have a point, just a small point we need to go over in our constitution for a change before we turn it over to our affiliate president, and she sends it on to President Rick Abono in November. But I think we are going through the entire Constitution this next meeting, just to get people familiar with it.
Okay, Nancy Yeager.
Okay. Hi, I'm the Seniors Division President of the NFB of Virginia. We're having our convention starting on October 25th, and it will go until October 31st. We have 2 senior events. One of them is our senior seminar, which takes place on Wednesday, October 28th, from 6 o'clock to 9 o'clock, where we're going to have what would have been a possibilities fair. This year it's a virtual possibilities fair. And then we're going to talk about people who have, well, we're not going to talk. A few of our members who have lost their vision later in life are going to talk about how that all went and how they realized that I can do all this stuff even though I can't see. On Friday night, we're having, as part of the total convention, an Oktoberfest party. And that means there will be several different Zoom rooms going on with several different things. The seniors has one, and we're calling it Savvy Seniors. And people are free to move around among the various rooms depending on what they're interested in. But our Savvy Seniors room, we're going to have 2 different trivia games. One is a One is a music trivia. The other one is kind of a senior trivia because the questions all have to do with things that would have been things that were relevant earlier as we were teenagers and young adults. And then we're going to have a couple of people tell jokes and maybe a book discussion or maybe not. So that's kind of what we're doing, and we're looking forward to it.
Janie Degenshine.
Okay, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, Janie would be next.
Okay, Janie, go ahead.
I had my hand raised to speak, but I think you did it because I'm going to be on next time, so I just wanted
to get ready to call on you.
Okay, very good. So I am the president, thank goodness, in the state of New Jersey for seniors and technology. Our convention will be November 18th, which is a Wednesday, through till Saturday the 21st. Our meeting is Wednesday. We open the convention, the senior division, at 1 o'clock to 1:50. We review the year. We have a guest speaker. I don't know if you know her. Her name's Ruth Sager. And then we have 2021, what's happening then. Also, we have senior panels that are going to be speaking on Friday. Four of those people are here. The first panel is their first convention nationally, even though it was virtual. It was their very first convention. Vincent Lorza and Jennifer Uchinel will be representing that as part of our senior division. And following that is representing Senior Retreat Virtual, Ruth Williams and Linda DeBardinas. All four of them are part of the 11-member New Jersey people that are on this call. I just wanted to share other things. Oh, you know, I do tech as well. So Mr. Matt, if you're still in a whirlwind after Tuesday and you want to be in a whirlwind again, join us on Thursday. That's a tech seminar I run from 1 o'clock to 4:15. We have six presenters, including things about Fusion, about new Braille items, listservs, iOS 14, Apple, a whole bunch of stuff. So join us then for that. And also on Saturday at 1 o'clock will be Scott White doing Newsline. At 2 o'clock, Matt Volbrecht. At 3 o'clock, David Dinateris, and he's going to be doing a session called Advocate or Disintegrate, followed by Joe Ruffalo, who's going to be doing a session called Why Am I a Federationist? He's been a Federationist for 27 years, and he's stepping down as our president, and we're going to honor him next year at a regular convention. I just want to share real quickly, I know I'm taking up too much time for other people, but what our senior division does. We have a meeting every month except July, August, and December. We generally have between 25 and 35 attendees. We have committees like senior caring calls, senior caring cards, birthday calls, committee, senior corner. We do inspirational things. That's each month. During the months that we're off in July and August, we had a senior chat session. We did seven of them, kind of like what we're doing here, just sharing nicely thoughts about being blind or inspirational times to get us out of that COVID, you know, funk. And let's see, what else? Oh, for those seniors in the state that did not get books from the Talking Book and Braille Center because it was shut down due to COVID, we took it upon ourselves as the senior division to get them books. So I purchased cartridges and we put on 2,500 books for any senior in the state that needed them, and we sent them out to them. So that was our big event for the summertime. And that's it. That's my wrap.
All right. Thank you, Janie. Thanks. I asked Buddy to unmute, but I do want to mention real quick, shameless plug here. 2 weeks ago when we did the Indiana convention, we had the honor this year of having National President Mark Riccobono. So we have recordings of his convention speech, which was good, as all of his are, as well as his presidential report, which was also good. And we did a fundraising game of Family Feud where we raised $500 and we gave it to the students division because they have a matching grant from Vespero. So they ended up getting $1,000 for the NABS. So there are a few exciting things. But anyway, nfb-in.org, and go over and click on the 2020 convention and hear anything over there of interest. We did two different sections. We did a lot of diversity, inclusion, unconscious bias. This year there was a lot of emphasis on that. Since it's certainly a topic right now of great concern and the elections and everything else going on. So we invite you to listen to that and watch the videos over there. Let's see, Buddy, did you get unmuted, sir?
Yes, just a question. I was wondering if you know what the minimum number of people that is would be needed to form a senior division in an area.
Okay, well, I would start out with a group, and two is a group. Three is better. Four is better, but you can start with two. So you just need to find one other person. And that is how some groups start out. Two people that say, you know what, let's do something. and that's fine. So it's helpful to talk to your state president because you can get support from your state that way, and you know, learn about who's in your state. Most of us in each state, we have people who may have joined some things with the NFB, but not other things. And there are people out there looking for something, especially I do think with COVID, people are now more willing to pick up the phone and get on the phone and talk to people because it is the only way sometimes they can socialize, you know, effectively. Especially if you're a senior living in a senior living situation where people can't come and visit you, et cetera, and things like that. So really, two people will do it.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Okay, in Maryland here, our convention is going to be November 6, 7, and 8. We are having a seminar on Friday afternoon at 1 p.m. till 4, and it's living successfully with low vision and blindness, and we're going to be talking about specifically reading and making adaptations and what is available from low tech to high tech. And then we will have Scott White also, well, actually one of his colleagues, Bob Watson, is going to talk to us about Newsline and the formats that Newsline program is available. The registration flyer should be up today on the Maryland nfbnmd.org/convention. It wasn't up as of this morning, but it should be sometime today. Then Saturday we have a luncheon, which will follow the morning session. That's Saturday, the 7th of November. And our guest speaker is a diabetic educator nutritionalist who happens to be blind. And she has created a menu, and the recipes for her menu will also be on the Maryland NFB webpage. And she's going to talk about healthy eating and foods that we should have on hand at home in our pantries that can help us with this winter season of flu and COVID. So that is what we're specifically planning for seniors at the Maryland convention. Are there any other states that are upcoming or any states that have had a convention and would like to share something from the past that you did at your convention if it's already passed?
I have no hands right now.
Okay. Let's see. I'm going to see what time it is. I don't know if we could.
It's 43. It's about 7.
43. So we have a few minutes yet. Okay. Okay. So that's good. That's good. We don't have anybody, I think, on the call from the D.C. affiliate, but the affiliate in D.C. does often do a lot of different things for their convention, pre-convention things. Last year, they had a senior division luncheon where they had about, 55 to 60 people in attendance, and they had a speaker. They are very active because the District of Columbia is not a state, and so there are different rules that apply for senior independent living centers and departments on aging. And so they had some discussions about that. They've had people come and speak to them about how many of these centers aren't being used by the D.C. population. And there was some discussion of why that might be. That affiliate is an interesting affiliate because geographically it is a small area. I think the District of Columbia is about 13 miles or a little more than that. So they have the advantage of physically often getting together now since COVID. But it does mean that they used to get together every month. So it has helped them form very close friendships, and they have been a very active division. So it is more challenging, Carol alluded to that. If you're in a rural area, it's very different from being in an urban setting. The Colorado Center for the Blind does have programming, and that state, or if someone from Colorado would like to speak about the senior division in Colorado, they are also a very active senior division.
You know, while we're waiting for any more raised hands, I was going to say, I have been doing a lot of work trying to archive conventions. So if there's any states interested, and I'm not doing anything, coming to your convention and actually recording the audio from Zoom, so at least we can have archives of your events, because sometimes people want to listen after the fact, or those who couldn't attend, and it seems to be a great way to promote the efforts. I think it's important that we archive events when possible. Contact me in info@lawfware.com. It's I-N-F-O, and my last name, L-A-U-F, loud and usually funny, W-A-R-E.com. Yeah, there you go.
I love it.
Yeah, if we can do that and work it out. Of course, I have 2-3 computers. I guess I could technically do multiple events. It just depends how involved I'm in the Zoom process.
Well, we'll be contacting you, Michael. You're awesome.